And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews as a podcast. I am your host, Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined as always by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy.
I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
Right. And so I know last time that we met about a month ago, I mentioned that I was going to reach out to Paizo and try to grab an interview. Didn't happen for this month. We're looking at April now. But in the interim, Paizo graced us with a new field test for the Starfinder 2nd Edition. As everybody, I'm pretty sure we have mentioned this, but like Gen Con this year in August is when the playtest rulebook comes out. And then the actual book comes out at Gen Con 2025. And so like this is sort of like the, okay, here are all the actual rules. Let's play with them.
Yeah, it's coming close. I mean, they're also doing it in two phases, right? Where you can get the PDF for the playtest and it's not a charge. And then there's the book and there is a charge if you have a nice book.
Yeah. And that's what they did for 2nd Edition Pathfinder 2, if I recall. I'm going to be honest. I don't know what their plans are for like the playtest, but... like if you are a collector or you're somebody who needs print in front of you in order to play, the print is probably good for that. But I remember for me, it was very difficult for me to use the playtest rulebook because they updated the rules like every other week. And so like my print book was not up to date. And that drove me crazy.
Yeah, I think we had like a running thing where we just had a bunch of post-it notes. Right.
Yeah. That's what you had to do. You just had to stick them in the book and pray that they kept their adhesiveness. So I'm pretty sure this time I'm just gonna not do that, and I'll just bring my nice new laptop with me. My life situation is different now. I have a portable computer that isn't a cell phone. Ooh. I know you're saying that you've always had your computer for gaming.
No, I bought specifically a convertible laptop for Gen Con 2017 or 18 when we went. I bought a new one recently because they were just way too handy for running games, like convertible, just little Chromebook style
things. I know, and for playing them. You've used yours in like every game that we've been in person since the pandemic lockdown got lifted.
Yeah, because they're just great. I can't recommend them highly enough.
Yeah. So another thing that we can't recommend highly enough is reading. Rules.
Oh, I was about to say, I don't read. What do you mean?
Read. But yeah, we're going to look at the field test document today. So if you want to open yours up, make sure to hop around. For those of you who have listened to our show for a while, you'll know that this is the class that I played at PAX last November when I went. And so like it's fun to see it like all here in person.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like a good time.
Yeah, and James, you have a lot of experience with first editions, yeah?
Oh, you with the Envoy? Yes. Oh. Many levels.
Right. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Hatsune Miku. No, Mitsuku Hanae.
There you go.
Hatsune Miku is the actual copyright character.
Right.
So let's talk about the Envoy. Like all classes in the three-action system, you get a key attribute, you get hit points, and you get a whole list of initial proficiencies. There's the same style of, during combat encounters, you do X. During social encounters, you do Y. And the table for advancement is only 5 levels, like all the other ones. It's a very small snippet of the class.
Yeah, just like a little teaser.
Right. A teaser, and that's kind of like what we're going to be. We're going to go over it very quickly. Well, we're going to be stopped to talking about it, and we're recording in front of a live Twitch audience, so those people are going to pop in and comment, and we might riff off them based on what we're feeling in the given moment, but we're not going to go into everything into super high detail. Grab the PDF, take a peek on it. We're just going to give you our thoughts, impressions, and a general overview.
I want to start with the first one. I have up on the screen the new art of the Navasi. The iconic envoy who looks like an Eldar guardian. I just saw it and can't unsee it. It's good art, but I miss the Starfinder enhanced Navasi.
Oh, I know. You loved when she was like glowing and like with the just callously taking her pistol and going, pew!
Just being annoyed at killing people. Like, yeah. I just love it. It's just such Revy Black Lagoon energy. Just, don't forget what they took from you.
Yeah, it's weird because like I was under the impression that like the enhanced art was going to be like their new style going forward, and this feels more like the original one but like crisper a little bit, you know.
Yeah, this one actually is maybe something that you would play at like a Starfinder kids table or a more approachable less obviously dangerous one, but you know, I have my preferences.
You do. You want a lady who can put you down whenever she wants.
I want danger. I am fundamentally broken in these games, and that I need as much danger as possible.
Oh, I have seen you. I've seen you play. I have watched you murder our direct superiors in games. I am aware that you like danger.
They gave me no other option. It's game theory. It's simple game theory.
It's true. Tim is really bad at not just antagonizing you in every possible
game. He's so good at it. He doesn't realize I will bite 100% of the time.
Very good. All right. So baseline stuff. Your key attribute is charisma. That's not a surprise to anybody who played the Envoy in first edition Starfinder. You're basically a bard with no magic.
I felt it was more like an Inquisitor. No, yeah, Inquisitor from like a first edition of my experience, where a lot of your stuff is dedicated to helping other people, and you're a little bit more resolute than I think a bard is, even though I think they have the same hit die.
Yeah, I was just thinking that the Inquisitor was more about like selfish buffs, like I'm gonna be better, and like the Envoy is actually like helping people.
What? Well, just because you play with Inquisitors that always take the stuff that makes them better.
That's fair.
It's not like they have a whole like class feature that's helping people, giving people teamwork feats for free.
They don't give them teamwork feats for free. You just count everybody as having your teamwork feats, so you always get the benefit. Yeah, it's selfish.
Yeah, but there's a way to boost that, if I remember correctly. I haven't played an Inquisitor in a while. Yeah, they do.
I do know you played one up to level 20, so like if you say that's true, I believe you.
Yeah, I think they whip them into shape. That you know, Pathfinder stuff, but your hit points do increase. They were six as standard Starfinder, now they're eight, so more get in there and go.
Yeah, you get more hit points, a little bit more. And then you also have initial proficiencies. You're trained in perception, trained in fortitude, expert in reflex and will, trained in either deception, diplomacy, or intimidation. You're also trained in a skill based on your leadership style, which is a new class path for the Envoy. And then you also get a bonus number of skills equal to 6 plus your intelligence modifier. This is a lot of skills. This is 8 plus intelligence baseline. This is the same amount as the Rogue in Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
How many stats are there in 2nd, or skills are there in 2nd Edition?
Well, like 12? There's not many. You're gonna have most of them. There's acrobatics, arcana, athletics, crafting, deception, that's 5, diplomacy, intimidation, medicine, nature, occultism, that's 10, performance, religion, society, stealth, survival, that's 15. Then there's also thievery for 16, and then there are lore skills, and there's like an infinite number of lores, so there's 16 plus lore.
So now that's significant.
Yeah. And so I think it's very likely, at the minimum, we're probably going to get a computer skill in Starfinder 2E, I think.
Oh, that and engineering.
Well, crafting might take over for engineering, because crafting does engineering in Pathfinder. We'll have to wait and see what they do. The other skill I'm not sure if they're going to keep is piloting, because in Pathfinder, driving lore is the driving skill, which is both an advantage and a disadvantage, because it's a lot easier to become trained or an expert in a lore skill than a regular skill. You can basically take a feat and get it for free. But it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing, and I don't think that they have announced what they're going to be doing yet. Mirror Wolf in chat says that they have been mentioned as skills in the field test. Someone says as pilot lore. So yeah, that might be it.
I think breaking it and making people good at piloting is probably fine.
Yeah, probably. I'm interested to see how they're going to handle that. I think that if you're going to do it as a lore skill, you could have piloting lore for like spaceships and planes, and driving lore for like cars, and that might be more minutia than the three action system normally does, but I kind of like the granularity personally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be real. Flying a plane doesn't always get you driving a car.
It's true. Very true. Speaking of which, you're also trained in simple, martial, and unarmed weapons, in light armor and unarmored defense, and in the Envoy class DC. Which, this is interesting. You're trained in martial weapons. Like, that's good.
Yeah, you get to fight.
You get a rifle. And it's great, because, like, the Envoy has a rifle in her new arc.
Yeah, I think before it was just, small arms, grenades, and basic melee was Envoys before?
Yeah, definitely. So now looking at the class, for your class features, the Envoy has everything you would, that all of the classes get at first level, you know, ancestry and background, attribute boost, initial proficiencies, all that stuff. Everybody has it. They get a feat. Let's talk about the things that are like unique to the Envoy.
Envoy directive.
Yes, the directive. So for those of you who've played in First Edition Starfinder, Envoy directive is basically like improvisations. It's a action that you can take that does a thing. What that thing is depends on the option. All envoys get this, get them for free at first level. That is like the universal one. And from what we've seen so far, every other directive needs to be accessed through a feat.
Yeah, and it's like the revised version of get them.
Yes. What are your thoughts on it?
I think it's fine. It gives a AC penalty to an opponent, which I think is stronger than a +1 to hit bonus, which is cool. Also, you can lead by example, which is I don't want to say term, that's the wrong thing. It is an interactivity thing, where when you do something, it gives a benefit to the rest of your allies. So you say do something and then you do it. So you get a bonus for doing the thing you're telling other people to do. Forget them. It's you get a damage bonus when you attack.
Yeah. And I'll say, as someone who's played this and the thing, that was fun. It was really cool to be like, okay, I'm going to use this action, but then I really want this lead by example. Like, you can use, since it's a three action system and most of the directives are like one or two actions, you can use multiple of them. And so then it's like, okay, but I usually can only trigger one lead by example if I'm going to do two of these directives, right? Because you only got three actions. It would be activate one, activate two, and then now which one am I going to use the triggering action to lead, which is fun. I really liked that part of this class. Another thing that's interesting about Envoy directives is that by default, they all have the visual trait, which means like your allies have to be able to see you in order for them to get the directive. But the Envoy directive feature notes that envoys can choose to replace this trait with or just add the auditory trait, meaning like I can shout and encourage you, or you could just see me being awesome and that inspires you.
And it's also like sense too, right? So like things that don't have actual sight can still gain the benefit of it.
Exactly. The other thing that this notes is that you can use multiple directives in a round if you want to, but you can never use the same directive more than once per round. Right. And all directives last until the beginning of your next turn.
Yeah, and there's some that get a flourish, which is you can just use it once per full round.
Correct.
Oh, or yeah, full round or full fight.
Yeah. So let's talk.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. There's also like a helpful note here about how skills are going to be working and about how the second edition playtest is sort of like in Starfinder first edition, both the operative and the envoy were skill classes, but the operative was like, you get everything, Jimmy. And the envoy was like, you only get social skills, Sally. And like, this is much more. We're going to just say that the operative is good at a very small skill set, kind of like in the James Bond stories, and the envoy is our skill class. So you're going to see this as we talk more about how this class operates.
Yeah, they get a study target that is a size up and kind of allows you to size up an individual, whether it's being with them, being around them, networking, researching them. So you get bonuses on deception, diplomacy, intimidate, and perception, and also recalling knowledge about that target. And you can only have one up at a time, but you can get more size ups as you level up.
Yeah, and initially you could only size up somebody once per hour. Mm-hmm. So like, if you're doing a big dungeon, you're not sizing up somebody all the time. There are ways to get around that too, even at low levels, which I think is really cool. Another thing that I've seen a lot of people talk about is how, as we progress through this class, I think there is a good comparison that can be made to say that this class looks like the second edition investigator. Specifically, the investigator has a mechanic called, like, oh my gosh, I burned that class out of my mind because I don't like it, but it's called On the Case is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And it does something similar. Basically, you study a target or like a 10-foot room or a specific object, and you gain all these benefits to like doing things with what you looked at. One of the big ones is recalling knowledge, and it allows you to do an ability where you essentially have this kind of like, okay, so it's a fortune effect, And what it does is you use your action to roll your die in advance. It takes one action if you are not, if that person isn't like your active target, like your active case. And if they are, it's a free action. And then if your next action is like an attack action or like falls under a specific list, if you take different talents, you basically have to use the die you roll. And so the idea is that you roll it in advance. The Envoy doesn't have a mechanic like that. Instead, it has Solic Coming, which is essentially when you start an encounter, if you're about to roll initiative and the person that you sized up is in that encounter, you can trigger Solid Coming as part of the initiative roll in order to gain a plus one bonus to the roll and either interact to draw a weapon, step, or stride. And that's pretty good. That's really good.
I love the idea that you are in a place, you found your mark, you go to have this potential thing start, and then you just leave. I think that's hilarious. Yeah,
that's really funny. Or you brave Sir Robin runs away. Like, it's very good. It lets you put yourself into a better position. The one thing that I'll say, like, I don't know if step needs to be here. And like, maybe somebody who understands the intricacies of this rule system would know better than me. But I am under the impression that if you are rolling initiative in order to use this ability, that means that nobody has acted yet, which means none of your opponents have reactions. So like, none of them can trigger anything that would trigger on a step. I feel like step doesn't need to be here. Like, unless there's an ability I'm unaware of that says you always have a reaction and don't need it to be the start of your turn to gain reactions. But like, you don't gain actions just from rolling initiative in Pathfinder second edition, or I assume in Starfinder. If you do, then this ability is worth it because you could get out of a flank. But if you don't, nobody can trigger against you anyway.
There might also be something that potentially let procs when you step.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. If there is something like that, that'd be another good reason to do it. But I think just off the baseline, I think that that's something you probably won't use. You'll be either drawing a weapon or you'll be striding. And
yeah,
hopefully you'll be either putting yourself into right up into their face to attack them, or you'll be hiding behind the soldier, which is where they want you. They want their pocket envoy behind their back. It gives you cover.
And then we have a list of leadership styles. They're basically like fighter styles. From the front, yeah, you're a person that like dives into combat, and they come in. I started a little bit quick there. There's three kind of phases of a leadership style, or three facets. One is the skill that you get a bonus with, increases your proficiency. Still iffy with 2E terms. You get a perk, which is also something you get at first level, which is usually another feat or feat-like thing. And finally, at sixth level, you get acts of leadership, which are things that you can do to give other allies the benefit of taking the lead, take it by leading by example. That's called take the lead, leading by example.
Yeah.
You can do something, and you can do something that's not necessarily what is written in the explicit text based on your leadership style to trigger that lead by example.
Yeah. I don't know if anyone listening has seen Has Been Hotel yet, but like, the best way I can put it is like, in the last part of it, I'm not going to give spoilers, but one of the main characters, who is very clearly the envoy proxy in that series, like raises their shield and calls out to their friends for them to like fight better. And like, that would be like raising a shield. I'm going to use that to lead by example and trigger my get-ems a damage bonus. And it kind of makes all of them more useful because it ensures that actions that fit your character's theme will allow them to be a leader, which is really cool.
Yeah, like from the front, it's raise a shield and take a move action to move within an enemy's reach. It's like actually getting in there.
Yes, you can't just move. No, you gotta be there. You gotta get your butt kicked. Some of the perks are really good too. Like, you know, From the Shadows gives you assurance stealth as a bonus feat, which means instead of rolling a stealth check, you can just use a result of 10 plus your stealth proficiency bonus.
That's what that is.
Yeah, yeah. So like, that's good. Like, that's not bad. It's really good for, like, you're not going to want to do that when you're trying to sneak around someone who could actually, like, hurt you in a fight. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to want to actually roll. But if it's just a bunch of low-level guards, pop assurance and you're fine. Like, yeah, you're good.
And that also triggers your active leadership.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, your active leadership. I'm going to get in there. If you take from the front, you get medium armor, and you whenever you would gain a class feature that boosts light armor, you also get that boost with medium armor, specifically like the expert proficiency, master proficiency, all that thing. Like, it's good. Guns blazing is pretty good too.
Yeah, Guns blazing. I saw that and immediately gravitated to that because that's the Navasi that I know.
Yeah,
the Navasi in my soul.
Incredible initiative is a flat +2 bonus to all initiative checks, no matter what skill you roll. And it's a circumstance bonus, so it stacks with pretty much everything, and it's better than most other feats grant. And then the active leadership is literally you shoot someone that has a multiple attack penalty, or do the area fire or auto fire, or if you reload your weapon, you're like, get him! Put more bullets in.
I love it. It's very good. It's so unhinged. I love it.
Yeah. And then honestly, I feel like there are more paths for the Envoy here than almost any other second edition class I've seen. Because, like, in total, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to, like, most of them are just, like, a sentence long for their effects. Like, most of the text is in the description. It's in the flowers.
yeah, your actual bonuses are about the same amount of as the explanations. Yeah,
it's very good. I'm a big fan of this. I like seeing this class path because, like, the Envoy was very much build your own person. This gives people a little bit more guidance, and hopefully we don't see people complaining about the Envoy and their action economy in this edition when people did that all the time in first edition.
And it was fine. Your action economy was fine.
Oh, I agree completely. Action economy was what made that class fun.
Yeah, totally. Well, that and all the other dumb little things.
Yeah, a lot of dumb little things. Speaking of dumb little things, you get skill feats at first level and every even level. And so if you're a human, rejoice, you get another one. And you get skill feats at second level every 2 levels thereafter. That is the rogue progression. And there's no caveats, because, like, other classes who are skill classes, but they're not supposed to be as good as the rogue, will have some sort of qualifier. As an example, the investigator has to pick skills either that are, like, acrobatics based, or they're based on their class paths, like skill, or the swashbuckler can only take ones that are acrobatics or based off of their class path. This one is just like, nah, just take a bonus skill feat, have fun. It's like, oh, you're gonna actually let this character be as good as the rogue at skills. I see. Good job. The rogue is already a damage class. It shouldn't be the best skill class. That's Alex's opinion. You also get skill increases. You get a skill increase at second level and every level thereafter, just like the rogue. It's very good. You also can boost them you can boost expert skills to master skills at level 7. Level 15, you can boost master skills to legendary. That is the rogue's progression. No complaints. If you want to be a skill class, that's how you do it.
Also, you'd probably use adaptive talent too, being a skill class, right?
Yes. Why don't you explain people what this new ability is? Because it's unique to the Envoy.
It is, what is that? Martial training? Whatever that was, but for a skill feat.
Yeah, you basically, every time that, starting at third level, whenever you finish your daily preparations, you can pick one skill feat that you meet the prerequisites for and gain it until you prepare it again. So, like, you're just swapping out a skill feat once per day. It's great. And then you get another one at 9th and 15th. So, like, you actually get more skill feats than the rogue baseline, because you're getting these in addition to the ones you just get at every level.
Yeah.
The Envoy gets more skill feats than the rogue.
Yeah, you can't use them as prerequisites for permanent, like, feats that you take, but you can use them as temporarily giving you access to other abilities, such as taking multilingual to temporarily learn a language, which is just cramming for the test, the class feature.
Yeah, and so, like, and one of the things that's really cool too is, like, let's say there's Catfall and there's Jaguarfall, right? And Jaguarfall needs Catfall. You can take, like, starting at level 9, you can take Catfall and take Jaguarfall, because Jaguarfall requires Catfall, and both of them are temporary. Like, they'll get swapped out by this ability. The only thing you can't do is, like, let's say I hit level 5, I can't take Catfall as my adaptive talent and then take Jaguarfall as my actual class talent. Because if I swap that ability, like, I wouldn't have the prerequisite anymore.
I do love how clear and concise that paragraph is, because if that was not there, this would have to be an FAQ.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very well written. Like, it is a well-written paragraph. It's very good.
I also did notice a key terms up there, suppressed, harried condition. Yeah. That's confusing. Is it suppressed or harried? Does suppressed give the harried condition? Does harrying give you the suppressed? Why? Those two words mean the same thing. It's confusing me.
So I think that what it's saying is that the condition is still the suppressed condition, but it's using the word harried to, like, flower it. Like, that's an adjective just describing it. I think that they shouldn't do that. I think that they should just say condition causing a minus one circumstance penalty. Harried makes it sound like harrying fire from first edition, which is confusing. And James and I and sat here. The
soldier
here.
Has that, right? Harrying?
Yeah. No, the soldier has the suppressed condition.
That's it.
Which is why, yeah. But what's interesting is, like, this implies that other people can give the suppressed condition, just the soldier gets bonuses when other people are suppressed, which I think is a good thing. But I'm wondering, like, I understand, like, James and I talked about this for like 5 minutes before the show started, trying to figure out what they were trying to say here. And I think that they were trying to flavor it to show, like, oh yeah, this is like harrying fire, Starfinder 1 plans, but like that looks like the harried condition rather than being a description. Like, please change that in your actual playtest or in your final book if it's too late to change that.
Yeah, it was just especially for somebody who's still getting used to how stuff in 2E work, despite playing some 2E, I'm just a little hesitant to just think I understand something.
Can I give you a little bit of tips to help you understand even more?
Sure.
Okay. At level 3, all characters from all classes grant a general feat at 3rd level and every 4 levels thereafter, and this is no different.
Gotcha.
Completely underwhelmed by my transition.
I mean, I didn't realize it was a transition. I thought I was having a stroke.
maybe you need to be a little wiser to the game, like our 3rd edition ability, our 3rd level ability.
Oh no. It keeps coming.
It's so good. Boom, boom, boom. The puns, they don't stop rolling. Yeah. Why don't you recover your off-kilteredness by going over this one?
You get a bonus to your perception against feints and lies. You get bonuses against people trying to demoralize you. People just can't mess with you as easy. That's all. It's like hard to fool the rogue trait, something like that.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure if this one is very good because it's a status bonus. And so, like, that means it doesn't stack with things like spells or, like, a lot of different abilities. Because most abilities will give you a status bonus. Like, whether it's a spell or, like, a feat. So, like, I feel like there are going to be places where this gets overridden by other abilities. I kind of wish it was untyped.
I saw this and just wondered if this was here to hit an internal math metric.
So, the answer to that question is yes, but also no. Because little things like this are how classes get to specialize. Like, like how the previous ability with the size up, where you get that flat plus one circumstance bonus to a whole bunch of things. Like, those little tiny bonuses are how this addition kind of makes you better than other people, because other classes can't get these same bonuses as easily.
Right.
Right. So it's kind of like a math metric, but it's kind of not. I think what's interesting about this is that because it is a status bonus, it actually doesn't stack with magic items. which means, like, I guess you don't need to wear, it wouldn't be Circlet of Persuasion because that's OGL, but you wouldn't wear one of those, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which is both cool, because on one hand, like, you're so good that magic can't make you better, but on the other hand, it feels kind of weird to not be able to use the thing that's clearly meant for people who do what you do. Also, a lot of those items go up to +4. Yeah. And this caps at +2. So, like, I don't know if they're planning on designing it so that these skills status bonuses never get higher than +2. But if they're not going to put that in, I think that this needs to scale better. So that, like, if you are telling somebody that you are better than a magic item, then your class feature shouldn't be overridden by somebody else's magic item. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Now, ancestry feats, number 5. Everybody gets these. 5th and every 4 after. A feat, enjoy. You also get expert in perception at level 5, and you also get this really cool ability called practice influencer, You get a reaction where if you are about to re-roll a deception, diplomacy, or intimidation check and haven't rolled yet, once per day, you can trigger this to roll twice and use the higher result.
Yay, that was already a thing that the Envoys got, but that's cool. It's good that it's a class feature.
Yeah, it's basically like the, what would it be? The expertise talents, pretty much?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good. I'm a fan of that. Also, arguably more useful than devise a stratagem. Just saying. I'm not going to let my dislike of that 2E class pool too much here, but just saying. If you're watching live on Twitch, you can see my face right now.
it's just pure vitriol.
Yes. That's my favorite class in the game, James. Done dirty. So, level God, I hope that the Advanced Player's Guide is supposed to come out. It's like, it's Player Core 2. I'm praying. It needs a Witch tier rework, please. Please. Now, level 5, you also get your proficiency ranks for simple, martial, and unarmed weapons increases to expert. And then also, if you attack your asset or the target of your get'em, you gain access to the critical specialization of all weapons for which you have expert proficiency. So that means that if I say get'em and I attack them, I get simple weapon. I get to use the critical effect for basically all simple martial weapons. It's really good. It's really good. My only concern about it is it kind of feels needlessly restricted. I don't really like, because like anybody else could just crit and shoot, but I can only crit when I tell my allies to do better. Like, I don't.
Wait, critical specialization is like just something you have to get with your weapons?
So critical specialization means that every weapon group has a bonus effect that happens when you critically hit with the weapon, mm-hmm. if you have the critical specialization. So like all strikes do double damage when you shoot them. Mm-hmm. But like, you know how in Starfinder, how like a lot of weapons would have critical effects in first edition?
Mm-hmm.
Weapons typically don't have critical effects unless they have a trait that says this happens when you crit, which does happen. But all weapons have one based on their weapon group. And every class can only access that weapon group one if they have an ability that says they gain the critical specialization. So like it ranges a lot. And the one of the things I don't like about this is that it feels worse than less powerful options in this game. A good example is that goblins have a fifth level ancestry feat, which you could take at the same level because this is a fifth level feature, where they get critical specialization with all goblin weapons just for free. They don't have to do anything with it. You could be a goblin wizard, and if you have these two feats, the one that gives you the trained rank and this one that gives you critical specialization, you could be a goblin wizard with a horse chopper and just chop that horse. Critical. Boom. I'm making it bleed now. And I think that it's kind of like, I get the flavor they're going for because they want it to be interactive with your directive class feature. But what if I don't want to use get them this turn? What if I want to use a different directive? And is it a good thing that like I need it to be my asset when I can only pick an asset once every hour? I think that when James and I talk about critical hits and when we play first edition, we have a specific term that we use. Do you think, will we get in trouble for using that term?
Which term?
Death of the Crit.
I mean, maybe.
All right, well, I've already said it. I'm sorry, Ryan, if you're listening and I'm in trouble now. Just let me know later. But basically, it's this idea that you get really excited when you critical hit, and then something in the game tells you, actually, you don't get this thing. And in first edition, that's the critical confirmation roll. That kills it. You're just like, oh, I rolled my nat 20. I was so excited. And now I don't get this thing because I didn't roll again high enough. And I think that this is sort of in that same line, because now I'm going to roll a nat 20 and be super excited that I'm going to get to apply my critical specialization or whatever. And it's like, oh, you didn't get them this round. Sorry. And it's like, oh, I would get rid of that. I don't think the crit specializations are powerful enough that it needs this limitation. And this is trying to be flavorful, but it's a limitation. Let's be real.
Yeah, I mean, it is cool that it's a target of get'em too, but I feel like with the target of get'em, if it expanded it to allow other people that are participating in your get'em, to get those benefits if they don't already have them. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that would be a buff. That would be great. And maybe if it said something like, when you lead by example, like for any directive, your allies can apply the crit, you and your allies can apply the critical specialization for all weapons with which you have expert proficiency. Like, that would be great. That'd be really cool. That is a great feature. This is just kind of a limit. Yeah. But so I'm hoping maybe that gets looked at and revised.
Yeah, I mean, but who knows? It might just fall in line with the other things from 2E, and you know, we just learn to grow and live with it.
Do we though? No. Or do we complain about it forever?
That second one.
Yeah, I know how this goes. I lived this life. let's talk about Envoy feats. This has a selection of feats available from first to fourth level. First level Envoy feats, you'll get one of them because envoys get access to a feat at first level if you're human or have access to a similar ancestry option that gives you a class feat. That's level one. You'll have two. And then you can count on a second one and a fourth one as you level up.
There was a lot. And there's, I mean, even in this playtest, there was a lot.
And you know what's really interesting about these feats? They interface with core mechanics in a way that I am not used to seeing in second edition game design until like level 5, 4, or level 6. And that's not me saying nerf these. This is me saying more of this, please.
There's like, it is such a widespread your ability to do things at low levels. It is very cool to see.
Yeah, a really good one. This one is called Acquire Asset. It's a level 1 feat. It's certainly the first one you see. Single action, make a melee or ranged strike against a creature that is not your asset. On a hit, your target becomes your asset as if you had used sized up. As far as I know, it ignores that that frequency of thing of like once per hour. And on a critical hit, you can attempt to recall knowledge about them, which is fine. But like, I want those bonuses.
I love that though. If you just shoot somebody in the heart and you're like, oh, I got it. Now check. They hate being shot in the heart. I'm a genius.
I am a genius. Yeah, but no. But like, this is the kind of thing that like, I feel like in other classes, they wouldn't give you until like level 8 or level 10. Because it changes the expectations of like a baseline class feature. And I would rather see this. This is great. This is really good. Keep this, more of this across all product lines forever, please.
Yeah, I mean, early on, maintaining two assets is great. Take them alive is, I think, needs a little wordy, but it's good.
Yeah, James is referring to diverse schemes where you could have two assets at the same time instead of one. And then take them alive means that you and your allies, when you use this directive, they don't take the -2 penalty when making a non-lethal attack with a weapon. And all I can see when I look at this is I think of that game where our friend Robin Solarian went and marked that level 1 character in the Star Sugar Heartland.
You mean the NPC who doesn't have a stat block? Just a guy.
Marked him. Boom! And he was essential. And we just sit there and Robin like has, for the briefest moment, has like this look on her face that's like, what have I done? And then it immediately goes away as she resumes the character. The facade returns. And she's like, no, this was right. He deserved this attack. I just remember sitting there and being like, oh my god.
I think we're all like, yeah, he still does he have resolve? Like, is he immediately dead?
Yeah,
can we do something on our turns to make him not be dead?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of just really cool things. I like Quip. If when an enemy is hit by a strike, you can demoralize them as a reaction. That's pretty cool. I also really like suppressing insults. When you demoralize somebody, you also suppress them for as long as they are frightened, which is very helpful, especially if you have a soldier friend. The soldier's really going to like you taking that.
Yeah, I was looking at a Watch Out, which is a first level feat, which is great because it looks like Nimble Dodge, but it's a +2 circumstance bonus.
Yeah. One thing I will say is that one of the abilities is called Danger Sense, and like I did a really quick rundown. I don't think that anything else uses that name, but like that feels like something else has to use that name. You know what I mean? Like that was a barbarian class feature in Pathfinder First Edition. Something's got to use it. I'd be a little iffy on that one.
I mean, it's still. I feel like it fits. I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm. So
what does the fortune keyword mean, by the way?
Fortune means that you can't spend a hero point on it.
Oh.
Yeah, that is the keyword that makes devise a stratagem even worse. But But here, for which one is that ability? That one is the fortune effect that the envoy gets?
Danger sense.
Yeah. So basically that means that because you're already using the higher result. A hero point would let you reroll. Mm-hmm. Usually fortune effects already let you reroll. The idea is that it's the first edition rule that you can't reroll. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so like a lot of them do that. On the cases unique, or devise a strategism's unique situation, it is dog water. But here, it is fine because you're already doing roll twice and use the higher for danger sense.
I do also want to shout out get in there, which yes. is another one of the directives that you just yell, and then your team could just move. They get a 5-foot status bonus mm-hmm. and speed, and if you lead by example, if you step or stride before the end of your term, all you can signal your allies to follow, and each of them within 100 feet that can sense you can immediately step or stride up to half their speed as a free action.
I will say, having played with that, Navasi has that one on her pre-gen at the...
It's a good one. It looks great.
It's fantastic. And this brings to me with one of my irks about these talents. That one is fantastic. But, like, almost all of the other directives are not as good as that. Like, there's definitely a situation, because, like, when you play the first edition Envoy... You have some of them very much feel like buffs, and some of them very, very much feel like debuffs. Like, mm-hmm. Clever Feint is a debuff. It just makes it so that you can never not faint somebody. Very good. You also have Dispirited Taunt. You demoralize somebody. You can never fail that check. Very good. You also have things like Hurry, which gives someone an extra move action. Or you have things like Get 'em, obviously. Or Inspiring Boost,
yeah.
which gives them bonus stamina points. Like those are all very on the same, clearly divided into buff and debuff, and they're good. My problem with these directives, it comes into two phases. Number one, a lot of the ones that are buffs are really just abilities that you active when a conditional has happened. That doesn't mean like when you're prone or when you are bleeding. It means like when this is happening to your ally, you are allowed to activate it. A really good example is Quip. I can only trigger Quip when one of my allies strikes somebody. Why can't I insult somebody with a Quip when I hit them? Like, why can't I say, I'm taking my gun? Yeah, looks like I got you like Swiss cheese. Oh, my joke is terrible, but that doesn't matter. I'm rolling to demoralize you with my bad joke.
It is... I think that's part of the change in assumption, right? From 1E to 2E, mm-hmm. where you're not your own ally?
Yes, you are not your own ally, correct. So you can't do that. And I just feel like if you just wrote it as a creature within 30 feet takes damage, be great. It'd be really good. I would say it'd be as good as get in there, because I could just trigger this reaction pretty much whenever I want it. But like none of these are buffs. And like... I would even argue that, like, from a gamer psychological perspective, the new Get 'em isn't really a buff either. It's a debuff. You give your target a -1 penalty to armor class. That obviously makes you hit better. It's good. But that ability does not improve your ability to do your thing. It just makes their AC go down, which is the same outcome, but a different play feel. And I don't know if that distinction matters for Get 'em, especially because the circumstance penalty is mechanically better than a circumstance bonus, because the game has so many circumstance bonuses already and they don't stack. A circumstance penalty is much rarer.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of Fainting, where, you know, it's a debuff. I think so. Yeah. I think the second level options just have other good options, like Change of Planes, which allows you to reroute your Get 'em so that you get full use of it in case the target goes down quicker than you think.
It's true.
Don't die on me. So get in there being in a stacked like level bracket, even though it's strong, it's probably something that you maybe circle around and get later at a higher level when there's something that maybe just doesn't fit.
Maybe. I think that they should definitely take a look and think about what types of options can we give to our players. What types of effects can the Envoy give to players that make them better at doing their thing? Because a lot of these don't do that. Don't You Die on Me is a great example. If you told me Don't You Die on Me was a skill feat, I would believe you. Like, that doesn't look strong enough to me.
I think some of them also don't seem strong enough, but I think they just interact well, like how Quip goes into suppressing insult.
Yes, right? I agree with that.
And like that's a good stack of penalties there.
This is true. Suppressing and demoralizing somebody with one check is very good.
Yeah, so the fact that it's locked behind somebody else, one of your other allies hitting, they better be hitting. You're probably doing something to make them better at it.
Hopefully.
I think they're good. I think a lot of these, I mean, with everything like this, it's just like rogue talents. How many rogue talents are written? Some of them are like black market, you know?
Yeah.
And some of them are great. And there's also two versions of hard to fool, which is always confusing.
Yeah, yeah. A couple of questions in chat. We have, with multiple envoys in the party, is there any limitations on how many extra free actions can be given between multiple envoys? There's no ability that gives actions in this playtest currently. Hurry was something that was in first edition, just to be clear. Like, currently there's no option that says the envoy is giving you a bonus action.
Well, I mean, with get in there, there is a, you do get a free action to move up to half your speed.
Oh, yeah, that, I mean, that's true. But I think that's the lead by example, right?
True, but other envoys could in theory lead by example on their turns.
Yeah, you could just do a leadership train, yeah, where lead, get in there, everybody gets a speed bonus, trigger lead by example, everybody moves, get in there, same thing, next person. Like, so theoretically you could just like be life coaching yourselves into a better workout routine by running.
So in a whole turn, if you had five envoys, you'd be able to, if say base speed is 30, 15, 30, 45, 60, 75 feet of extra movement.
That's hilarious.
You're all doing that. Just for
it's like the new Obaziah squad meme, but now it's Navasi squad.
It's so stupid. I don't see the benefit to this, I guess, except leaving or something. But
you're all the Flash. You can't stop everybody from getting in there.
Just in 6 seconds, your whole team's just like, run this way, run this way.
God, we have Starfinder developer Dustin Knight in chat, and now he's going to write down that they're going to change it from a free action to a reaction. Just watch. Watch.
probably, I think make it a flourish or something like that. Because it has a concentrate, directive, envoy, and visual keywords, but it doesn't have the flourish.
Yeah. I would love to see someone multi-class envoy barbarian and take that ability to get in there and then basically use... Barbarians get an ability called throw ally, where you pick up your friend and chuck them. So you throw them and then yell, get in there! And make them move again.
That's so stupid. I love it.
Yeah, the game has a bunch of really stupid combos in it, but like Milo V3 mentions in chat, three action system design tends to have narrower feats. Like, each feat does something much more specific than you would see in Starfinder 1 or Pathfinder 1. But that doesn't mean you can't combo them into silliness like this.
Yeah, I think maybe if you want to make maximum of that, you just put in scenarios that have treadmill.
Right,
like threats or something like that, and you guys could just blow it out of the water.
That's so funny.
Like a Fred Flintstone car, you just kill everything.
Exactly. So we're coming up with about 10 minutes left on time. James, let's talk a minute left about, let's talk for a minute about the envoy. So obviously our first time reviewing this, the field test stuff, when we reviewed the soldier, neither of us were very happy with that soldier.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it was fine. It just felt like it was in a game that I might not have wanted to be in.
I would say that probably means it's not fine. like we devote time and energy to getting in front of people to talk about this game. I think that probably means that it needed to be looked at. But then we got the Mystic, and I feel like the Mystic was like exactly what I would have wanted in this system, right?
Yeah, it felt like a great space oracle.
Yeah, and to me it felt like the perfect translation of the Pathfinder 1 Mystic into Starfinder 1 Mystic into Starfinder 2, into the three action system. So on a scale of soldier in the field test 1 to Mystic in field test 2, where would you say that the envoy in field test 4 feels like it ends up?
Ahead of the Mystic, because its base class ability doesn't kind of feel a little silly and redundant.
Now, you're saying specifically the Vitality Network is what makes the Mystics feel silly and redundant.
There was the part of it where you could give your allies a bonus, but then you would be able to give up your Vitality points to give your allies in 30 feet a worse version of that bonus with a skill check.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So you don't have a, there's a lot less words for doing things that don't feel as good.
I think that a lot of the mystic stuff feels very like cosmetic. Like a lot of those feats are like, I have a Wi-Fi system, I can put my gear in there, and that's very cool.
I have a dog.
But like, yeah, that doesn't tell me like what to do with it. And so I think in terms of raw, what this character brings to the party in terms of mechanics, obviously the mystics is spellcasting, but I also hate that argument. Because usually what happens is you say, this spellcaster class has these weird design issues, and then someone says, well, the class isn't why you take that, you take it for spells. And it's like, no, I take it for the class. But I think that the mystic has some of those weirdness where like the envoy, like mechanically is like, whew, it's really good. Like I felt like the last couple things I mentioned about like the play feel of buffing versus debuffing, I kind of think that feels very pedantic, right? Like, so I think that like that is an Alex preference and not really an issue with the class's design. Like, I think this is mechanically the most solid of the three we've seen, and so I would put it ahead for that. I also like it because it does the investigator better than the investigator, and it gives me hope that the Pathfinder team will fix the investigator. And in terms of like how much this feels like a Starfinder class, how faithful it feels, I'm leaning towards it's probably on mark with the mystic. Like this feels like an envoy. This feels like I could make any of my envoy characters that I've played. Like, I could do Raka with this, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah.
There's plenty of ways for me to shout at people and to demand that to let me speak to their manager. Like, get in there. I'm going to speak to your manager. Get in there. And everybody runs into the manager's office. It's perfect.
Yeah.
So I think that this is very strong. And I think that if all the classes we get are at this level of respect to the original system, that it's going to be fantastic.
I feel
just
like,
hope. Come on, soldier. Don't do me wrong, Starfinder development team. Give me what you promised, Thirsty.
I feel like this version of the Envoy is actually the version of the Envoy that was given on the Starfinder first edition promotional materials.
Yes.
The Envoy in Starfinder promotional materials is such a better combatant than the first edition Starfinder Envoy was. Because it just had so many charisma things for like a charismatic fighter. It just never had those. So this rework really fits it into that mold of somebody who can actually scrap and stay in there, which is exciting for me, even though I never played Envoys that way. So I feel like there might be some stuff lost in transition, but I don't think it's anything that you'll miss. The first edition Envoy was much more about specialization in like three skills.
Yes.
An envoy was very good at three things. And even if numerically they were equal to or one behind an operative, they would have abilities to either reroll that check or reroll somebody else's check when they messed up. They had so many ways to impact like three skills and be amazing at those. So yeah. losing that ability, you might not like it in your concepts, but you gain so much more and I think a lot more versatility. Yes,
yeah, like
as Mirwolf said, you can run it with a chainsword, and that would that would proc stuff, and that's really cool. And then you get your other friends with chainswords to run in there.
Yes, I agree. I like to me, like this is a banger after the banger of the mystic, like high quality stuff. I'm excited about this. I feel like the last three playtests of a field test have all been like really good. Like in terms of, because like when I'm looking for these classes, like I'm looking at the mechanics and I'm looking at how much does this make me feel like I'm still playing Starfinder first edition. And like these, like the ancestries we saw and the android and the Vesk and the mystic and now the envoy, like they all hit that money mark perfect, like bullseye. Like Starfinder team, don't miss. What do you think?
I think so too. Sorry, I was just joking around there.
Yes. Very good. Now, this brings us to about the end of our show. James, what have you been up to recently? I've heard you've been spreading democracy.
Oh, I mean, that's partially why we started late, as my Helldivers match went long.
Yeah, it's true. We I'm sorry, everyone. The technical difficulty that I mentioned was that James hadn't defeated the bots yet.
It was the bugs. I'm going to go back and kill the bots later. They're my first love hate.
Nice. That's good. You know what? I started collecting Magic the Gathering cards again. I'm gonna play with our friend Mike and get my butt handed to me.
Oh, you're in those games, huh? That's like the underground Vietnamese cockfighting arena of Magic the
Listen, I just hope they're not gonna be too mean to me because like if I get crushed too bad, I'm not gonna want to play anymore. It'll be like I play this one game, like, well, I'm gonna leave now. Because like I already do that with Marvel Snap. Like when I play Marvel Snap, if I lose really badly, I just swipe up, turn the phone off, put it down, and go do something else before I get super toxic.
Well, what I can tell you from those games is just be okay with GG go next.
That's fine. I've heard that Peter's deck is all about just he has three different decks to completely shut down all play. I'm like, Peter, we play this game to put cards on the table. Why would you do this to us? But we'll see. I think that we had to schedule this game out like literally. It's like in April. It's like April 20th. Like I
Yeah.
was like, oh,
Welcome to the scheduling purgatory.
I hate it. But I also I'm that's fine because that means I don't have to try to fit it in this week. I would have hated that even more. I also started collecting comic books.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I started reading it would have been Teen Titans. Now it's just called Titans, and I'm enjoying that a lot.
I read through Gwenpool, most of it. That was pretty good.
Oh, Gwenpool's pretty cool. I've read about her, but I've never read her comics.
The comics are actually pretty good. I'm not a huge on comics, but I got an inkling and I purchased their subscription or whatever that was and read through it, and it was pretty good.
Oh, that's awesome. So I got into it because one of my friends who is in Dustin's game for Fat Pathfinder Second Edition is super into like Batman and stuff. And I was talking to her about a web comic that I thought was really funny, where Nightwing does like a magic performance with like the magic character and gets turned into like a rabbit you would pull out of a hat, and it's funny. And she's like, "Oh, well, did you know that that happens a lot to Nightwing? Actually, there's a issue where he gets turned into a fox, and you already know
That's the
that
key
all that's
word.
all that's all." Need to do. For those of you who don't know, James has gotten me to try at least two games now by saying that you could be a fox in it, and
Yeah.
we've modded one of them.
Yeah, it's like the Manchurian candidate effect for Alex.
I'll give it a try if you tell me I can do that. And so I went out and I hunted down. Apparently, this cover is like a variant issue, so I had to hunt down a store that was selling it, and now I have it. And the storyline is cool. It apparently ended back in January, and the idea is that there's this big monster coming to Earth, and only another monster can beat it. But that monster likes to conquer planets, so they can't really ask it for help. So Beast Boy shapeshifts into it, but in shapeshifting into it, the monster is so big that its instincts overwhelm his brain, and he starts trying to conquer Earth by making these little spores that infect people. But when they infect people, it be basically turns them into werewolves, like
Oh.
lycanthropes and shit. And so it's fun. It's a really cool story. I enjoyed it. And then what happened was they got to the end and they left it on a cliffhanger, and I'm like, oh, you jerks, because now I want to know what happens in the not furry story.
They got to get you to buy the next one. I was thinking I don't have comics, and then I realized I have all of Gangsta the manga, and also I think I have every issue of Johnny the Homicidal Maniac.
That's, I mean, you let me borrow. Is Gangster the Manga you let me borrow?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. I like that book. I had it for like a year because you gave it to me right before the
No, that's
lockdowns.
fine. I've already read them.
Well, thanks for joining us for No Direction Beyond. Tentatively, our next episode is probably going to be at the end of April. I want to say the 24th. Does that sound good to you, James?
I'm gonna say yes, and then I'm gonna check with my calendar and my wife just to double check.
Yeah, that's the important part. We don't get any scheduling past Joe. And so that'll be our tentative date. We might bump it around based on availability. I'm gonna reach out to Paizo again and see if I can get an interview to talk about cool Starfinder 2 stuff, because it's we've been doing a lot of reviews and we haven't done a whole lot of interviews. So I'd like to get an interview.
That would be nice. It has been a little while.
Yeah, I don't think we've done an interview since we came back after like the John reboot and then the James reboot.
No, I mean we did do the one with
We had Thirsty and Jenny
yeah,
on,
Thirsty
you're right.
Jenny.
Yeah. Oh, how could I forget
I know,
that?
that's kind of a big one.
Yeah, got grilled in front of a live studio audience. Good times. I enjoyed that. So I think probably we're gonna try to get that review. And if not, I think Mechageddon comes out around then, doesn't it? Isn't it? Is it April or May?
I'd have to check the back of the Starfinder Enhanced book.
We'll figure it out. Worst to worst, I'll let James borrow the comic books and maybe we'll review the cool Dynamite comic books instead. We'll figure it out. But until next time, go beyond with no direction.